Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are going through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now, we're up to episode one of season three. That's right, we have finally made it to season three, considered a turning point in the series. There's a bunch of reasons for that, and I'll get into that a little bit in the podcast. But if, what is this, episode one of season three? It's actually called Evolution. This one was directed by Weinrich Kolbe. Teleplay goes to Michael Piller. Story credit goes to Michael Piller and Michael Wagner. And it aired back on September 25th, 1989. We're still in the 80s, but the show looks very, very different, as we'll get into. In this one, the escaped nanites, a Wesley Crusher science project, threaten the Enterprise as well as its critical research mission. So Clay's going to join us to talk about this one. It's Evolution. It's season three. We're finally there. Episode one. Right after this audio clip, me and Clay are going to get into it.
I can't get the story of Gulliver out of my head. Overpowered by Lilliputians. How long do we have to wait?
We can continue to bypass the part of the computer that's affected. But if the nanites are spreading through the whole ship...
You smell a change in... What?
The Earth of Forge. We have an environmental system malfunction on the bridge. Acknowledge.
Aye, sir.
Nitrogen oxide. Toxic levels.
Working on it, Captain.
I switched to manual control of the air handling system.
Mr. Worf, report.
He entered a computer access room and sterilized one of the processors with gamma radiation.
The nanites in the upper core are all dead, Captain.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back to Evolution Season 3. We're starting off putting our fresh foot forward or something like that. Anyway, this one's called Evolution, and we're going to be joined by Clay. Clay, how are you?
I'm good. I have my prerequisite glass of beer for the Wesley episode.
Oh, yeah. Was it surprising to you that he's supposed to be 17 at this point?
Not on the HD version, because the HD is not doing his acting any favors.
I was going to say it might be the worst part of this episode might be his complexion, quite frankly.
And also there's a shot late in the episode where, like the zipper on his pants is like way down on the back. So I don't know if he was just growing out of his costume or what, but it's an awkward time for Wesley.
Is that when he was crawling around at the bar?
No, it's when he and Geordi and Worf are look right before the guy blasts the nano things.
Oh, okay, yeah.
With the gamma rays and
Hulk sizes the Hulk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Clay, we made it. We're in season three of Star Trek.
I can tell because the uniforms are different.
Yeah, I feel the uniforms are different. You have to tell me if I'm just sort of overreacting to I've made it over the mountain crest and I can see like Valhalla in the distance or something.
Uh-huh.
I feel like this episode felt like it was produced 10 years after season two.
I did not feel that way.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm totally talking on a like a technical level.
Oh, technical level?
The way it looks.
Okay. Yeah, look-wise, I would agree. Yeah, it looks really good. It doesn't have as much of the blatant 80s feel that all of the other ones have.
Yeah.
The first two seasons have. Yeah, and the new uniforms look good. I assume they're two pieces now.
Yes,
they are. Because Picard's been doing the tug thing.
Yep, they have a collar and they are two-piece. Although the minor characters still wear...
the old uniforms.
Right, right. I actually did notice it's different than it is later. They changed the uniforms again later on.
Yep.
Because these ones have two seams going down, like, either side of the chest.
Yep.
And I only noticed this because I just watched an episode from, like, season 7 or something, where I don't know if it's because all the actors are getting heavier or what, but it looks like they just changed them into windbreakers.
Oh, really?
Because yeah. they're all puffy, and Jonathan Frakes looks like he should be playing Orson Welles.
He's at the country buffet in between episodes. Yeah, I mean I don't know if it's just the uniforms have a big impact. You can tell it's a later season just because the uniforms look much, much better. It's glaring how much better the uniforms look than the original jumpsuits are a little bit ridiculous when you think about them.
Well, it's just strange because, like, it's not like they haven't changed the design, like, color wise or anything.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that it's all one, it was all one piece. Made it extra awkward for some reason.
Right, without a collar. It seems kind of childish almost. Like if you don't have the collar on them. Let me see here. I'm going to we started off with discussing the uniforms. I feel in general it felt the big thing technically I noticed was that I thought that the direction was much better. And it doesn't make sense because this was directed by Weinrich Kolbe, who's been there I think throughout the series.
Yeah.
But this episode really struck me just by how the camera was moving and like how they were shooting over the shoulder shots, which I don't feel that I remember watching a season 1 or 2 episode and going, wow, they're really nailing this conversation that they're filming. I felt like those early seasons had a lot of just the cameras on a group of people talking to each other.
Yeah, yeah. I noticed right away maybe it doesn't count as much because it's an effect shot, but the opening shot of the episode is really nice.
Is that
that where you've got like the Enterprise backlit by that red giant star?
Yep.
It was just a really nice shot. Maybe I don't know if that's because they updated it and tightened it up or what, but it was a nice shot.
Yeah, yeah. The effects look good. I think I was reading that. The first season episodes usually do just to try to entice viewers. They'll make the effects look a little better. They try to spend more money on them. sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, I guess they have to entice people because I don't know why the Christ you would open your season with a Wesley-centric story.
Yeah, we can get to that. Just about how I think this one's weird to be a season opener. It was actually not produced to be the season opener.
That kind of makes sense.
I just wanted to go through a few bits of information. Since this is the start of season 3, which has been a long time coming, and I'm excited, and you could probably tell from my overreaction about how the show looked that it's like exciting to be here. We'll talk more about that, but I wanted to give a few bits of information about what happened during the season. So at the end of season 2, the head writer was Maurice Hurley, and he left at the end of season 2. So we've got a new showrunner. His name is Michael Wagner, and he wrote this episode, co-wrote it with Michael Piller. And Piller is more well-known because Michael Wagner only lasted 3 weeks on the job. I think he got a better offer or something like that, which would not be difficult. And he couldn't
turn down that job on the facts of life.
No, he had actually come from have you ever heard of Probe?
No.
Probe is apparently a not well-received but critically acclaimed sci-fi show that him and Piller both came from. And so Wagner leaves, and Piller is nominated from his work on this episode to become the showrunner. And Michael Piller is going to showrun TNG for the rest of its run.
All for 6 or 4 seasons?
5, right? So 5? 3, 4, 5, wow. 6, 7, yeah.
I feel like that's kind of unusual.
Yeah, especially for these genre shows. Genre and sitcom shows usually have a quick turnover.
Yeah.
I guess just because you get tired of doing – like a sitcom's hard to run for more than a couple seasons, and then you're like, I'm done with all the jokes here. So anyway, I'm going to act as though Piller basically ran the show for this entire season because he only had a couple episodes where he wasn't actually in charge. The The staff is mostly going to settle in at this point. You have Hans Beimler, Richard Manning are going to become co-producers. Melinda Snodgrass becomes an executive script consultant. So you have those guys. You have Piller added in. You have Wagner added in. Eventually, Ronald D. Moore comes on board with the bonding. He writes that and becomes a executive story editor at that point. Hans Beimler, Richard Manning, and Snodgrass all leave at the end of the season. So this is the last time that we're going to be with them.
Mm.
As you were saying, Robert Blackman joined the crew of the show as a costume designer. And he is, how much do you think these new costumes cost per person?
Per person?
Yep.
$10,000.
$3,000, actually. So I kind of baited you there by saying yes.
That's why I am not in charge of running a show.
We'll never get a shot, but we look great in these outfits. They're made of wool instead of spandex, which is
makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah, they look meatier.
Yes. Yeah, they do. Yeah, it's you look a little bit more imposing in them than you do in the hugging thing.
Yeah, it's just so strange how there's not really that much of a change to them, but it does stand out.
So I'll read a little bit about them. With Roddenberry's permission, Blackman changed the primary color on the uniforms to black, with only blocks of red, gold, or blue to signify the branch. So I guess he did tone down the totality of the color. I'm trying to look up what they looked like. So the original series were really just more, they were all a solid color with black highlights, and he basically just increased the amount of black in their uniform.
That's interesting. It's got to be like negligible because it doesn't look any different.
Yeah, it's probably just under their arms. Their sides are now more black.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
The men's costumes became two-piece outfits. The costumes for McFadden and Sirtis remained as jumpsuits, requiring them to maintain a specific weight. That's nice. That's typical.
Can't give the ladies the two-piece, otherwise they'll blow up.
Get Marina away from the all-you-can-eat buffet.
Why do you think we got rid of Pulaski?
And it was following the introduction of the costumes that the nickname of the Picard maneuver was given. Although I noticed he'd been doing it before these new costumes. He was doing it in season two.
Yeah, I think I caught it once or twice in season two.
So he's actually given something to tug on here. Blackman also overhauled the Admiral uniforms, and he worked on a bunch of other costumes, including newly redesigned Klingon and Vulcan outfits.
So to the Admiral outfits, they're no longer just
a skirt.
Well, weren't they just like unused versions of the movie suits, basically?
Oh, that's right. I'm thinking of the dress uniforms.
Oh, the dress, yeah.
That they were wearing when ambassadors actually came on. So what the admirals? What do the admirals? I remember the admiral in like Conspiracy just wearing a normal spandex jumpsuit.
For some reason, I thought at least. I'm thinking of the ones usually you see them on when they're on the screen behind a desk. And I feel like they're wearing something similar to like Wrath of Khan era.
Yeah, you might be right. That's probably right.
With that kind of like high collar. Kind of like what they have the Enterprise C wearing in yesterday's Enterprise.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's probably right. Yeah. Yeah, that is. Does sound familiar now that I'm thinking about it. So that's basically it. This season also introduced a bunch of people. Tony Todd became a recurring character as Worf's brother.
Show you how that shit works.
So it works out. Mark Leonard would come back as Sarek eventually. Q and Majel Barrett come back. John Delancey comes back as Q, and Majel Barrett comes back as Loxana Troi. There's, you know, spoilers. Denise Crosby comes back in this season.
To park everybody's cars.
Yes, right. And the A-team makes their appearance when Dwight Schultz makes his appearance as Lieutenant Barclay in this season.
Nice.
So all a whole bunch of good stuff. I'm really looking forward to this season. I remember it being one of my favorites. And so let's just get into this episode, huh? What'd you think?
Well, I am also looking forward to season three. As long as the rest of season three is not like this episode, and this is just them being like, hey, remember how we used to write episodes before? This is a quick reminder before we do something better.
This is the introduction to that.
Yeah, I didn't think it was terrible. There were some interesting things in there that I didn't think they really went very far with. But the thing that was bugging me is that it's basically the same story as Home Soil, isn't it?
It is, sort of, yes. It feels like they took a bunch of previous episodes and sort of mixed them up with yeah. each other.
Well, first, I have questions.
Sure.
Do you want me to go into the questions, or do you have something? Do you want to give your opinion
yeah,
first?
Yeah, I'll just give a quick opinion. Okay. I was reading the AV Club's review, and he basically started his off by basically how I feel. He's like, I'm at danger of overrating this episode just because it's not great, it's still so much better than other season premieres and other episodes from
yeah.
the past seasons that I might have a tendency to think that it's better than it actually is. this one, I legitimately feel that there was a big production change that happened. I don't know if it was just people getting accustomed to things or... You know what's kind of crazy to me? How long do you think that they had between seasons?
Probably not as long as you'd think. I don't know, 6 months?
It's three months.
Wow.
This is a holdover from when shows had 26 episodes in a season and actually ran for a good portion of the year.
Yeah.
But I was... You know, nowadays it feels like when you have a 12-episode show, it feels like you have 8 months off between episodes.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I've been watching The Flash,
yep,
which is the first, like, standard network television show I've watched in a while.
Yep.
And I remember after, like, 8 episodes, I was like, oh, well, that was a pretty good first season. I guess it'll be back in next year. But it's a full, like, 22-episode season.
Oh,
I couldn't believe it because I can't remember the last show I've watched that's been a full television, network television season like that.
Yeah, it takes a long time to get through it.
But, yeah.
I mean, I guess my point here is that the writers and the crew and the cast don't really have that much time off. You
yeah.
know, like, you'd assume they'd get a month off and then they have to get back to work sort of trying to get ahead as far as possible so that they aren't, like, rushing by the time the show starts.
Right.
But you really don't have that long recovery time that you have in modern television where you can arc out your stories and sort of come up with the way that things are going to go and storyboard everything.
Right.
So I think that's really the major reason that I'm impressed by how different the show looks, kind of. It's like... It feels like they sort of redid everything. A lot of it's very cosmetic. It's just sort of costumes and, like, makeup looks better, and Worf's like wig looks better and things
yeah.
like that. And some of it, I feel that the show is getting much better at polishing turds at this point.
I could see that.
Which is kind of what this one's doing, because I don't think this is a great episode. I think this is pretty thoroughly average.
Yeah.
But just the way it works out and the way it looks, everything seems a little bit better at this point. So what were your questions that you wanted to ask?
Well, I think overall it suffers from some of the same problems they've had previously. Like, my first question was, what the hell was that experiment they were trying? Did I miss it, or did they just never say exactly what it is?
Stubbs's experiment?
Yeah. What is the point of that experiment?
Other than
to talk about baseball analogies.
You know baseball?
Yes, my father taught it to me when I was young.
Once, centuries ago, it was the beloved national pastime of the Americas, Wesley. Abandoned by a society that prized fast food and faster games. Lost to impatience. But I have seen the great players make the great plays.
Do you recreate them on a holodeck?
No. In here, with the knowledge of statistics, runs, hits, and errors, times at bat, box scores. Men like us do not need holodecks, Wesley. I have played seasons in my mind. It was my reward to myself for patience, knowing my turn would come. Call your shot. Point to a star. One great blast and the crowd rises. A brand new era in astrophysics. Postponed 196 years on account of rain.
I don't know. I He might have said it at the start, but it's one of those things I never pay attention to when they're just like, when Picard, we've said it before, when Picard is just like, we're circling the star because we're going to do this with this thing. And it's the captain's log at the beginning, so you never really pay attention to it.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I was also, I also thought it was kind of interesting in that it doesn't really matter anymore.
No, it does. It doesn't matter at all. It's just, I think the thing that stood out to me was that the change in that character over what happens in the episode is so drastic and so intense that I feel like you should at least know why he's freaking out.
Well,
because he goes from you know, scientist on the brink of doing this experiment he's waited his life to do to basically committing genocide over the course of 30 minutes.
Well, he does mention that he won't be able to do this in his lifetime again.
Right, but he's still like, I mean, he goes kind of crazy. He definitely gets very strange as it goes on in terms of his eyes start getting more wild.
And yeah,
I mean, maybe it's because the nanobites keep electrocuting him. I don't know.
Yeah, he can't remember his statistics or anything. I feel he starts off a little bit crazy. I think a good sort of, like, a defining character beat for him is when he tells Troy to turn off the beam going into his soul.
When she tries
to, like, tell him how he's feeling, which, besides being an interesting character beat, I feel that's such a line from a writer who's new to the series, who had been watching previously, you know, and would, because we've had the question of, like, why don't people tell Troy to just, like, fuck off? Like, because she comes up and tells everybody how they're feeling, sometimes in a group setting when they might not want that to be known to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like a new writer coming into the show and be like, I would tell her just to, you know, to get the hell out of here and not let that happen.
I do think they are continuing to write Guinan better than they write Troy.
Yeah, they do.
Because they do more with Guinan with fewer words.
Yep.
Except for the Frankenstein thing. They probably could have lost that. Although it's nice to see that Frankenstein has made it through multiple centuries and across planets.
Yes, yeah. There was some other reference she made to a literary book, wasn't there? Or was that, did Stubbs make one?
Stubbs was talking about baseball.
Oh, I feel like I was, I must have missed something then. I thought Guinan said something. I can't remember. That's fine. But it's, I feel Stubbs was okay. It's kind of the, what I think is interesting is that if this was an earlier season episode where the plots were so, plot driven, they would have made a big deal about what his experiment was.
Yeah.
And I think the show,
that's true. That's a good point.
The show's hitting a new, marker where it's more about how the characters are reacting to this thing that's happening. Mm-hmm. And the thing is not particularly important and how specific you get about it.
Right.
I don't think the show does a particularly good job of getting drama out of what's happening.
I think they missed the mark. Because they had, well, it's not really an A and a B story because it's all part of the same story, but they had two, you know, kind of themes running through this episode. One was the Wesley angle.
Yep.
And the other was the scientist angle. And I found it really interesting how they kind of, nobody really acknowledges the fact that Wesley created life.
Yeah, he basically created tiny Datas, right?
Yeah. And I actually was thinking about that because when they start talking about, you know, shutting it down and why you can't do it, it's like, oh, this is like Measure of a Man on a larger scale.
Or Home Soil. Do you mean Home Soil or Measure? Oh, yeah, Measure of a Man because they can't kill Data.
Right. Yep. But Home Soil as well. And the thing, I thought like that the area they should have mined a little bit more was the argument over whether or not they could exterminate the nano things.
Yes.
Because I think, because you have, it's a lot, you've clearly got the professor who is thinking, well, yeah, kill it. We have to do this thing.
Right.
And then the crew is basically, once that thing proves to be a sentient creature, then well, it's like, well, prime directive or whatever. We can't just go and exterminate it.
Right. Yep.
Even though it didn't exist 5 minutes ago.
Right.
So that conversation is really interesting.
Yeah, they didn't have, you feel like that should be a conference room scene And that's like the classic conference room, right? Where you bring all the characters in and they all sort of say their defining characteristic trait about how they would interact with this new life form.
Yeah.
And they don't do that. The conference room scene is basically bringing in Stubbs and telling him that they have to check on this and his experiment might be in jeopardy.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I mean, the crew does, once they learn that it's life, they switch immediately into, we have to protect whatever these things are that Wesley has created somehow and just let them walk around. I think the episode suffers a little bit from how Wesley-centric it is. He's toned down. He's no longer like super obnoxious. But now I've just reminded myself, could there be any less fanfare about bringing back Crusher, Dr. Crusher?
Oh yeah. I was trying to think. I didn't watch the end of season two, but do they give Pulaski any sort of send off?
No.
Or just like between seasons they switched him?
Just between seasons they switched Pulaski. The very final episode of season two, Pulaski has a huge role in it, and there's nothing. She doesn't say goodbye or anything.
Well, the fanfare they do give to Gaith McFadden is that awful hairdo she has.
Yes, she has.
Which is...
It is a Warp Factor 5 out the sides, basically. Just, it is blown out beyond comprehension. But they have a nice little scene where I was immediately reminded that she and Picard, or just Stewart and McFadden, have a much better chemistry than Pulaski ever had with anybody.
As soon as they have their first scene together, it's kind of like, just even the way Picard, you know, welcomes her back or says hello to her, it's like, oh, there's something interesting going on here.
Yeah, there's something. And him having to awkwardly deal with, like, how Wesley... I could have done without all that stuff. Just the Crusher worried about how... Dr. Crusher worried about how Wesley Crusher is sort of managing himself and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind it as much if that was more of the point of the episode.
Right, yeah.
You know, because I think you could probably get an episode out of that. I don't know if it would be, you know, set the world on fire.
Right.
But I think it would have a better play. Because, I mean, that concern that she has doesn't really play into the plot at all.
No,
I mean, the only way it plays in is that she goes and checks on... Excuse me. Sorry.
No problem. What you're saying is the... You know, if Dr. Crusher's worrying about Wesley Crusher had caused him to lose the nanites, you know, like if she was like, Wesley, you have to go, like, you've been working too hard, you have to do this, and she like made him walk away from the experiment before he had secured it or whatever, and that caused the nanites to get out.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen because you open the show with him, the camera pans over on him and he's sleeping and he forgot to put the top on it or whatever.
The only effect that her, you know, worrying has on the plot is it makes an excuse for her to have to talk to him and for him to tell her what happened.
Yeah.
That's the only thing it does.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's fascinating. I feel I feel like there's a lot of polish and a lot of the plot lines just really don't end up, they all tie together. It's not like there's anything wrong here. It's just that you're not particularly blown away by how things are going to resolve each other.
Well, I have a resolution for you.
Sure.
I was thinking about this at the end of the episode. What if they had put a time travel spin on this and it turned out, like, we don't know this went by right now, but it turns out later that this action is what creates the Borg.
You mean?
Wesley's evolving of these nanites is what then evolves into the Borg.
How would the nanites go back in time? Oh, you'd make the plot have something to do with the nanites going back in time, basically.
Well, no, I mean, you know, I don't know. They're next to that star. They get hit with something, and all of a sudden they're like 200 light years in the past. You know, some shit, you know, stupid shit like that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, that would be a good tie-in.
If that happened, favorite episode.
Yep.
But it doesn't, so I guess we shouldn't even talk about it.
And the nanites, unfortunately, they appear at the end. They take control of Data.
They can hold literally gigabytes of data.
Yes, which was a much more impressive statement back 20 years ago, I think, when it was written than what it is now. Like, really, gigabytes? Not I got a flash drive that holds terabytes, bitches.
Yeah.
the The nanites, I was sort of, one of the plot problems here is that there doesn't seem to be a lot of discussion about the things that are going on. Like, Data's like, I can put the nanites in me and we can talk to them. And Picard goes, is that a good idea? And he's like, I think it'll be okay. And Picard just goes, okay. It feels like that's a much more dangerous thing than it actually is.
That should have a much bigger part. Like, they don't even, I mean, at least Worf is the sensible one. And he's like, well, wait a minute. If they have control of a Starfleet officer, then that's not going to help anybody.
Right. That's a pretty bad thing going on there.
Picard's just like, meh, whatever.
Yep.
Just go for it.
Yeah. And even the, you know, there's no race against time where Picard is like, Mr. Worf, prepare to flood the computer banks with gamma radiation. And he goes, okay. And then Data just goes, I've entered contact with them. You know, there's no race against time for Data or anything.
Right.
Really just, they're just hitting the plot points to get to the next point.
I mean, not even a race against time. It's like they don't even consider, you know, it's less of a race against time and more of just like an extermination. You know, it's if that's a problem and you have this way to solve it and that's the way you're going to solve it and two. You know, if anybody should be more concerned about the welfare of the nanites, it should probably be Data.
You would think so, yeah.
You could have some sort of thing where they want to just wash them out and Data doesn't want to do that and that, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally agree with that. I also feel like a lot of what the nanites do is more sort of comical than life-threatening.
Computer, identify malfunction immediately.
Pawn to Bishop 4. Knight to King's Rook 3. Bishop to Queen's Bishop 4. Knight to Knight 5. Queen's Knight to King 2.
Controls are not responding, sir.
Queen's Bishop 3. Bishop to Bishop 2.
You know, the closest they get to life-threatening is when Stubbs exterminates a bunch of them and they turn off the oxygen system or whatever.
Right. When they flood the bridge with, like, carbon dioxide or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody just stands there.
Yeah. Stands there coughing, just going, what is happening? Yeah, you'd think they'd have some kind of like airplane masks would fall out of the ceiling or something.
Yeah, or just get up and leave the room.
Yeah, leave that room.
I will have to say, the most unbelievable thing about the story is that it's, you know, how many centuries into the future?
Yep.
And everybody's been living with computers for hundreds of years, and nobody thought just to turn the ship off and on again. Because that usually works with my computer if it's acting weird.
Yeah, you must know how to watch that episode, Contagion. You didn't watch Contagion, right?
I don't remember.
In Contagion, the season 2 episode where they get an alien probe gives them a computer virus, basically.
Oh, really?
And the resolution of the episode is Geordi shuts the ship off and turns it back on. It is.
Okay, I take it back then.
So they would have been doing a rehash of Contagion at that point.
I mean, even if it doesn't work, you should probably try.
Yeah, I mean, it should be the first. Geordi should just be recommending that every single time something goes wrong. At this
take
point,
take the dilithium crystal out, blow on it a couple times, put it back in.
Yeah, the
hold in the reset button when you hit power.
It's just such a funny callback to the era of the times. Like, I'm sure that was seen as like revolutionary technology when a computer, you know, in the late 80s when they're like turning a computer off actually fixes things.
Yeah,
and now it's just kind of a punchline to a joke about like, oh, that's how you fix a computer. So there you go.
Yep.
The other things, they glossed over McFadden returning, as we talked about, which is bizarre. They gloss over the fact that Pulaski is no longer there, which is a little bit strange.
Right.
They also gloss over the promotions that have happened, where Geordi is now a lieutenant commander, and Worf is a full lieutenant, security chief. I don't know why they would have done that.
Does he become Lieutenant Commander Worf at some point?
Only in DS9.
Oh, okay.
He does not. He stays a lieutenant throughout TNG.
Oh.
But yeah, you sort of hinted it before, or you were talking about how this doesn't really feel like a season premiere. I think that's kind of a problem. You know, I don't understand why they didn't, especially in an episode that like this, where we've been sort of complaining that a plot problem is that not a whole lot of this goes on. I feel like you could cut out a lot and just have it be about reuniting with the characters. And it would be okay.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you have that many changes. I think you kind of probably could have had an opportunity to, for lack of a better term, you know, reboot it. Like do like a soft reboot.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, you know, maybe you're picking everybody up off a shore leave or something. You know, yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but, no, that's true, yeah. Or just the...
coming back from the summer, everyone's got tans.
I always feel that...
Really looking forward to seeing Carol in Spanish class.
Hey, guys. How was your summer? It was great. The... I always feel like if I was running a show like this, I would have the first scenes of any sort of season opener would always just be settling on like various shots of what the people are doing around the ship, mm-hmm. you know, and you'd kind of cut between them, and it just doesn't happen. It really feels like this episode could have come anywhere, and the only thing that slightly makes you raise an eyebrow is that Wesley Crusher has this little tween freak out where he's like, you're not even around, when he's talking to his mother. And that's the only thing that's really hinted at the fact that Crusher hasn't been around. She's,
yeah,
you know, it's like,
do you think, I mean, you might know, have, you know, trivia behind it, but is that one of the reasons why they put it as the premiere?
I don't know why they did the actual, let me see here. The, Ensigns of Command, which is the next episode, was actually the first produced. And I don't know why that would be.
Is that another Wesley episode?
The Ensigns of Command is the one where Data must convince a reluctant colony of more than 15,000 to prepare for evacuation when Captain Picard attempts to negotiate a three-week reprieve from aliens intent on colonizing the planet themselves and wiping out any humans found there.
Yeah, well, that sounds interesting.
Yeah. I don't know why this one would be shot second and aired first. Maybe they felt like this one, Ensigns of Command might have no reference to Crusher being back, and this might be the first time that they bring it up.
Didn't seem like a very expensive episode. Maybe the other one wasn't ready or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you realize that Stubbs was actually doing play-by-play for a real baseball game?
Was he really?
Yeah, he was. I was
wondering if maybe they were just using like writers' names or something like that.
Oh, it's a famous game. I can't find it right now, but it is. I think the Mets were involved. I'll put that as a note later on. But it is a World Series game, I believe.
I wish in that scene where he was talking about that to Wesley, and Wesley's like, "Do you use the holodeck?" And he's like, "No, I just use my mind. It's kind of how I relax, and it's a present to myself when I finish." I wish Wesley was like, You should just use the holodeck. It's pretty cool. Have you ever been in it?
Have you ever seen anybody use the holodeck? They can't stop talking about it for days. You should go on in there.
You can have a snowball fight with your gay lover if you want.
You can do anything. There's anything and everything. You can solve a mystery. You can be shot with a shotgun. You can be shot with a Tommy gun.
You will grow up fast if you are growing up around a holodeck. Do you think they have like the same kind of you know, like when you're younger and your parents don't want you watching HBO, do you think they have that kind of settings in like the holodeck? Is there like a V chip in the holodeck?
I'd assume so. You have to enter like a code, like a 4-digit code that you forget constantly.
If you want like the really dirty stuff.
I'd imagine you'd have to have child locks on it because children can seem to just walk anywhere in the ship.
Oh, that was the other question I had. Maybe they've touched on this before.
Sure.
Where do all of these kids come from? And like, what is, how come Wesley seems to be the only one who's like a member of the ship, but there's just like a whole bunch of other teenagers that he can hang out with?
Yeah. I mean, the show's mentioned that there are families on board.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
I don't know what they do all day. Later on, they establish that there is a school on board, which makes sense.
Oh. Okay.
Wesley is just gifted and talented, I guess, and he doesn't need to go to school. They never really explained why he is not just a normal kid and why he.
Yeah.
Why they basically put him into child labor, right? And like are making him be an officer on the ship.
Yeah. And how is he an officer without going to Starfleet?
He's an acting ensign. I don't know what that actually means, but that's what they'll call him. They'll call him an acting ensign. And I don't know if that means he actually has seniority over someone like O'Brien, who is.
I was just going to say, if that was me, I would make O'Brien salute me all the time. Because you got to have a little bit for yourself.
Yeah.
If everyone else is shitting on you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's all it needs. Well, I mean, I think we're done. So I'm going to play a little bit of a clip here, and we will come back with our thoughts.
Do you have any children, Guinan?
A lot.
Ever had any trouble relating to them?
Just one.
One.
Wouldn't listen to anybody.
Well, they all go through that.
I'm the species of listeners.
Did he grow out of it?
Took several hundred years, but I managed to bring him around.
How?
A mother shapes her child in ways she doesn't even realize. Sometimes just by listening. Cute couple.
See? Now that is healthy for a boy his age. I mean that as a doctor, not as just a mother. Ah, it is so good to see him having fun for a change. With an attractive young woman who obviously looks at him with extraordinary affection. What do you know about this girl?
So, Clay, how did you, what would you rate this one if you had to get a rating?
I would say if I was basing it off of everything I've seen thus far,
mm-hmm.
I would probably give it like a three.
Okay.
Maybe 2.5 or three.
Yep.
If I was basing it on what season three should become, I would probably give it a one.
Okay.
Just for the reasons I've said, where it just feels like it must be, maybe it's different for you because you've been watching every single episode.
Yeah.
But I feel like this just falls into that mass of kind of not really doing anything that all of the ones that I've seen
yes.
have been a part of.
Yeah, yeah. I'd agree with that. I mean, I think this episode, if you were to take the whole, you know, after I've watched all of the seasons, if I were to look at this one, I'd say this is probably an extremely middling episode. Like this is maybe one of the most average episodes you'll ever encounter.
Yeah.
There was a sort of confidence to the production that made me feel comfortable watching it, where mm-hmm. I wasn't as annoyed as I've been in previous seasons with an episode like this. They're definitely just getting better at making the bad a little bit better. And we might, going forward, it might be difficult to find like really bad episodes. I'd assume that my really bad episodes in the future are probably going to be from a flawed concept.
Okay.
And you know, I don't think we're not going to get the Justice episode or the Neutral Zone where it's just like nothing is going on and this is all just terrible stuff.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a little bit difficult to rate, but I think you're right. I think I overrate this one probably because it's so much better than season one and two, even though the episode is not outstanding. There's something going on here. So I'm going to give it a three because I do think it's pretty much an average episode of Star Trek.
I will agree that watching this one really felt like what I remember TNG being.
Yeah, that's
at least the aesthetic of it. Anyway.
Yeah, no, that's exactly how it felt. Very, it felt familiar. And when I was watching it,
right,
I almost
right.
felt relieved. Like it was like, oh, like things are just going to kind of be like this from now on with like
right.
with better plots essentially sometimes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's about it. I'll give it a three. We're off to a decent start here with season three. Starting season three with a three is kind of fitting, I suppose. But outside of that, it's, you know, I'm excited for the season. I think it'll be good. It'll be certainly more easy, to go through, easy to talk about, easy to enjoy actually watching these episodes before getting into it. But I've been having a lot of fun anyway, regardless. So thank you, Clay, for coming back.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to the first one where I can really get behind it and say like, yes, that's what I'm looking for.
I think it's coming up real soon, but I do want you to do Survivors because, fuck it. I'll just say it now. I think Survivors is underrated and it's one of my personal favorites.
Okay.
And that is episode three of this third season.
Is that the episode where the band Survivor has a guest star?
Yeah, they star as fish guys who are comatose. And they
count me in.
They then jam with Mick Fleetwood and the universe is restored. I think I love Survivors. I think it's one of the first true mysteries that the show does.
Cool.
So yeah, hopefully we'll be back for that. I'll be back with the Ensigns of Command, and somebody else will be joining me for that one, I think. That'll come up in a couple days. But thank you guys for listening. Clay, do you have anything you want to plug?
Well, you and I are doing a podcast for the 60s British sci-fi TV show The Prisoner. And if you're interested in that, you can find it at backinthevillage.com or on Twitter at Prisoner Podcast. And we're getting close to the end of the series, so it's going to be pretty fun to wrap up.
Yeah, yeah. It's a short series for anybody who hasn't watched it. I'd recommend it. Check out the podcast. It's very good. All right, guys. Thank you very much. I'll see you in a couple days. Until then, have fun. Enjoy the third season of Star Trek.